Welcome to NFP for Life with your hosts, Dr. Les and Betty Ruppersberger. Dr. Les and Betty are certified natural family planning instructors, and they come today to bring you the good news of natural family planning. Stay tuned as Dr. Les and Betty explore the science and technology and the practical uses of natural family planning. And now, here are Dr. Les and Betty Ruppersberger.
Good afternoon, brothers and sisters in Christ, and welcome to our program, NFP for Life. Betty and I are here to continue an ongoing discussion that we actually started about 2 months ago when we were exploring the idea of what does it mean to be pro-life. And so this particular program is in honor of our March for Life, which is coming up this Monday, January 23rd. Down in Washington, D.C., and we're going to discuss a whole lot of topics on abortion and Roe v. Wade, because I think a lot of people in our country, and especially in our listening area, not that it's any different than around the rest of the country, just don't really know what Roe v. Wade is. But before we get into our topic, Betty's going to open with a reading and a prayer.
Good afternoon, everyone. And I'd just like to ask everybody out there in our audience to hold my sister and her family in their prayers. She's very ill, and she needs your prayers desperately right now. So thank you for that. And in the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit, amen. Gather in God's presence, filled with God's Spirit, nourished by God's Word, we join to discern God's will for us. A reading from Timothy 2. Remain faithful to what you have learned and believed, because you know from whom you learned it, and that from infancy you have known the sacred scriptures, which are capable of giving you wisdom for salvation. All scripture is inspired by God and is useful for teaching, for refutation, for correction, and for training in righteousness, so that one who belongs to God may be competent, equipped for every good work. I charge you in the presence of God and of Christ Jesus, who will judge the living and the dead, by his appearing and his kingly power, proclaim the word to be persistent, whether it is convenient or inconvenient. Convince, reprimand, encourage through all patience and teachings.
And that's the word of the Lord. And I think that that's an appropriate reading, because we're all called as Christians, and especially as Catholics, to stand up for the truth and stand up for life and to evangelize and correct in a gentle and compassionate way those who are in error. And we intend to try to educate this afternoon as to the extreme error that exists in our land today and has existed since 1973, when the Supreme Court case of Roe v. Wade legalized abortion in the United States. And before we get into the actual legal aspects of Roe v. Wade, Betty's going to read through some startling and amazing statistics that will give you an idea of the scope of the problem. And I hope that everyone out there who is listening realizes that they are listening to All Catholic Radio here on WISP 1570 AM. And this is a live call-in radio program. And our number is 215-345-1570. That's 215-345-1570. And we invite anyone who is listening this afternoon to call in with any comments or observations or questions that they may have about the subject of abortion or Roe v. Wade and the March for Life that we're going to have this coming Monday, that we'll talk about a little bit later in the program.
I'm going to give you some hard facts about abortion in America. And it may be a little shocking to you. You may already know this, but those of you that don't, you know, please join us in this fight. I feel that people that are standing up for life is starting to become greater and greater and stronger and stronger, because we need to turn this around. Did you know that the taking of a human life by abortion is legal in the United States at any time throughout the entire 9 months of pregnancy for any reason? And did you know at 18 days after conception, a baby has a heartbeat? And did you know at 6 weeks following conception, the baby's brain waves can be measured? At 8 weeks after conception, the stomach, liver, and kidneys of the baby are functioning and fingerprints have formed. And at 9 weeks, the unborn child can feel pain. And did you know that 700,000 abortions are performed each year in America after 9 weeks of pregnancy? Did you know that the overwhelming majority of all abortions, 95%, are done as a means of birth control, and only 1% are performed because of rape or incest, and only 1% because of fetal abnormalities, and 3% due to the mother's health problems? And also, did you know for every 2 babies born, another baby dies in an abortion? That's 1.5 million babies every year, 4,000 babies every single day. That's one baby every 20 seconds. That's approximately 40 million babies since 1973, and that's just here in America.
And when you start multiplying those numbers and apply them to all the other countries in the world, although a lot of other countries in the world do not have the extremely favorable abortion laws that the United States have, and the organizations such as the National Organization for Women and Planned Parenthood are not as active in other countries, although they do exist in other countries, they're not as active in other countries and proactive in promoting abortion. We have right here in Bucks County, off Street Road on Lewis Drive, an abortuary or an abortion clinic where abortions are performed every week to the tune that over 3,000 abortions were performed in Bucks County just in this past year by that one particular location. And I know that Bill Miller and the Bucks County Pro-Life Coalition and groups from Archbishop Wood High School and Generation Life are there several times during the week praying the rosary and offering compassionate advice and counseling to the women who are going in to very unfortunately subject their babies to an early demise. So I think that those numbers are rather depressing and somewhat rather astounding. And when you think that over 40 million abortions, and actually the true number is about 46 million, and that 46 million represents more casualties than all of the wars that the United States has ever been involved in since 1776 when we became a country.
Amazing.
And the people that, amazingly, without getting too much into politics, that are out protesting, you know, unjust wars and protesting how many casualties and deaths that there are in the wars that are being waged over in Iraq and Afghanistan, and are against some of the policies of the current government in the United States, seem to have no problem at all with the abortion laws that are on the books, and feel that it's completely appropriate to kill our children here at home, but it's not appropriate to kill our children here over in foreign lands.
And I think that more people are stepping up for life, and we need to step up and vocalize our horror for this, you know, horrible thing that we call abortion. And we need to change these laws, and we need, as respectable people, to stop the killing, especially of unborn babies.
Betty and I thought that this would be an appropriate topic, not only because this is a pro-life week and the week leading up to the pro-life march, which is now in its 33rd year, and we'll talk about that in a few minutes, but also because we are right in the middle of the hearings for Judge Samuel Alito, who is a nominee for the Supreme Court, who we believe has somewhat more conservative opinions about abortion and Roe v. Wade, and if elected to the Supreme Court, will become the fifth Catholic on the Supreme Court, which will be the first time that there is a plurality of Catholics, five altogether, out of the nine judges on the Supreme Court. Now, unfortunately, calling yourself Catholic and being a Catholic doesn't guarantee
right.
that you're going to be pro-life and anti-choice, but the fact of the matter is that there's an interesting situation going on in language, and I'll talk to you about this in a few minutes, but I just want to point out to you that the pro-choice people refer to those who are pro-life as pro-lifers, but they call themselves pro-choice, and what they're really talking about is they're pro-abortion.
Hmm.
Because they are talking about the choice to have an abortion, and there is no other part of the choice. It's not like a choice between A and B. It's a choice between, they feel that they have the right to make the choice to terminate the life of a child and therefore call themselves pro-choice, but they're really pro-abortion. And the newspapers and the media really ought to get down to brass tacks and call it what it is, because if we are on the opposite side of the coin and we are pro-life, then they must be pro-death.
Hmm.
You know, and you need to call a spade a spade.
And even our past pope has called this previous culture, our culture now, the culture of death. We need to reverse that and become the culture of life and embrace life and, you know, stand up for life. And if you can't march for life on Monday, we need you to pray. And a lot of parishes are going to be having prayer services and things like that. But even if you can't even leave your home, you can pray for life and help to encourage through prayer changes in our laws.
In discussing the landmark decision of the Supreme Court of Roe v. Wade, I think a lot of people have heard the phrase and they know the names, but they have absolutely, positively no idea what the decision actually was. Roe v. Wade was a landmark United States Supreme Court case that established that most laws against abortion violate a constitutional right to privacy. Now, notice that it has to do with privacy. Our Constitution guarantees us the right to life. It is a guaranteed constitutional right. The Roe v. Wade does not violate that right. What it discusses is your right to privacy. And as a result of guaranteeing that right to privacy, which is not written anywhere in the Constitution, it overturned all of the state laws existent at that time in 1973 that outlawed or restricted abortion. And it is one of the most controversial decisions in Supreme Court history. This decision has prompted a decades-long national debate over whether or when abortion should be legal. It also has generated a debate over the role of the Supreme Court in constitutional adjudication and also the role of religious views in the political sphere. It has become one of the most politically significant Supreme Court decisions in history. It has reshaped national politics. It has divided the entire country into pro-choice and pro-life camps and has inspired grassroots activism on both sides. Opposition to Roe v. Wade comes primarily from those who view the court's decision as being illegitimate for straying too far from the text and history of the Constitution, and support for Roe comes from those who view the decision necessary to preserve women's equality and personal freedom. The interesting issue is that the woman who was involved in Roe v. Wade, her name was Norma McCorvey. She lived in Texas. She got pregnant. She wanted to get an abortion, and Texas had an anti-abortion law. She took that law, she filed a lawsuit, and joined some other parties, including a licensed physician who was arrested for violating the Texas abortion statutes, and she filed the case against the district attorney in Texas and against the attorney general. And the law in question was whether or not performing an abortion was a crime, except in the case of saving the life of the mother. And Texas ruled that she could not get the abortion, and the suit claimed that the laws in Texas were unconstitutionally vague and abridged the rights guaranteed to pregnant women by the 1st, 4th, 5th, 9th, and 14th Amendments of the United States Constitution. And this all started in 1965, about 8 years earlier, with a landmark Supreme Court decision called Griswold versus Connecticut, where the Supreme Court recognized the right of privacy that emanated from a shadow of various provisions of the Bill of Rights and gave constitutional protection to the use of birth control by married couples. And then the right of using birth control was extended to protect birth control by non-married couples in a 1972 decision called Eisenstadt versus Baird. The only reason that I'm bringing this up is not to bore you with the details, and I can see that Betty's starting to glass over in her eyeballs, but the right of privacy to use contraception came 8 years before the right to abortion.
Mm-hmm.
And so there would be no abortion without contraception, because the attitude is that women who do not want to get pregnant, whose contraceptives fail, still do not want to be pregnant. And so the Supreme Court, in Planned Parenthood versus Casey in 1992, upheld that abortion was necessary to back up failed contraception. One of the interesting statistics that were found is that 48% of all the pregnancies in the United States are unplanned. 48%. Now, when we teach the eighth grade class at St. Ignatius,
mm-hmm.
do those children know that having sex makes babies?
Well, they say they do.
And we tell them over and over again.
Exactly.
So if 12 and 13-year-olds in eighth grade know that sex makes babies, then why is it that 16 and 18 and 20 and 24 and 30 and 35 and 42-year-olds are not aware of the fact that sex makes babies? And yet everybody poo-poos any discussion about abstinence, meaning not having sex, and being chaste and following the dictates of the design of your body. So with 48% of the pregnancies being unplanned, it's found out that over 53% of the women who conceived an unplanned pregnancy were using birth control at the time they conceived. So 47% of those pregnancies that are conceived as a result of failed birth control are aborted, and that equals the 1.5 million abortions that occur every year in the United States. So we've had legalized birth control in the United States since 1965. We've had the pill on the market since 1960. We have every kind of contraceptive, and we discussed it on this program many times, that's immediately and readily available. And we're not condoning contraception, but I'm just saying that it's available. And women use them, and men too, but mostly women. And they fail so frequently that women still conceive. So the Supreme Court and the government of the United States has decided that abortion needs to be legal as a backup contraceptive. And in fact, the majority of abortions in this country are done for contraceptive purposes.
It's really horrifying. And, you know, my thought is all the money spent on contraception, who are we making rich here? And who are we protecting? I mean, even the commercials on television as, you know, commercializing these contraceptions, they have to explain that they can cause stroke and, you know, women shouldn't smoke and they could cause blood clots and death even, and they do not protect against STDs. So what is the purpose? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. And who are we making rich here? It drives me crazy.
But even more pathetic than that, we're killing our children.
We
have eliminated one entire generation of humankind just in the United States. And it reminds me of the prayer of that individual who was very despondent when praying to the Lord and said, God, why do we have war? Why can't you send us a leader that'll lead us to peace? God, why do we have disease? Why can't you send us a leader that'll lead us to cures for these diseases? God, why do we have all these problems and why can't you send us someone to help? And the answer to God is, I did, and you aborted them. What are we destroying that could lead us to where we need to be in this world? So even the idea that the studies that we had mentioned have proven that access to contraception does not decrease abortion rates needs to be emphasized over and over and over again. And the propaganda that is on the websites at Planned Parenthood and all the pro-choice and pro-contraceptive messages that are out there is nothing other than propaganda. In 1955, there was a statement that came out of Planned Parenthood that said that no scientific evidence has been developed to support the claim that increased availability of contraceptive services will clearly result in decreased illegal abortions. And at that time, abortions were illegal. Later on, they frequently asserted that contraception, if made safe and available to all, would be the most effective remedy against abortion. But when looked at carefully, this objection is clearly unfounded. So we have statistical studies and proof documented over and over and over again that show us that abortion emanates from contraception, that Roe v. Wade had nothing specific to do with abortion itself, but had to do with a woman's right to privacy, and it's a private matter if a woman becomes pregnant and decides that she wants to terminate that pregnancy. We'll talk about some of those other issues a little bit later.
I'd just like to remind our listeners that you can call in at 215-345-1570. If you have a comment or a question, or you're going to go on the march and, you know, you just want to encourage our listeners, 215-345-1570. Give us a call.
Now, to get back to the march, Betty's going to talk a little bit about the march and its history. But I just want to let you know that this year's theme for the march is Roe v. Wade violates the American way. And the reason why that theme was selected is because the American way, the Bill of Rights, and the Constitution guarantees that we have a right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I think most children in elementary school are aware of at least that portion of the Constitution. In discussing these rights, Nellie Gray, who is the instigator and actually came up with the idea of this March for Life every year, said that in the war against Nazi Germany, America went over there and stopped the kind of killing that we're seeing right now. And we sat in judgment of those who did that killing at Nuremberg, referring to the 1946-1947 war crime trials at which German physicians were accused of euthanizing people who were considered unworthy of life. And now the United States of America is doing the same thing, where millions of children continue to be killed, and it just goes on and on and on. So this year's 33rd Annual March for Life, which is being held on January 23rd, this coming Monday, in Washington, D.C., is Roe v. Wade violates the American way. And Betty's going to talk a little bit about the history.
Yeah, and Marching for Life. This article comes from Father Frank Pavone, who's the International Director of Priests for Life. And in 1973, 7 out of 9 justices declared that the children in the womb are not persons under the Constitution. Now, they're not persons, but I just spoke about how a baby at, let me just find that. A baby only after 18 days has a heartbeat. So these justices are saying that this baby's not a person. The March for Life is a great annual family reunion for the pro-life movement. Tens of thousands from across America arrive by bus and plane and gather for a midday rally on the eclipse between the White House and the Washington Monument. Now, it is amazing. I've been there, tens of thousands, and we hardly even get any news coverage.
And the only news coverage that you do get is the pro-choice people standing on the curbs, yelling and spitting and cursing and holding up some other signs and holding an anti-rally against the pro-lifers who always peacefully march down the street. It's a peaceful protest. It's not meant to be violent. It's not meant to be irreverent. We say the prayer, we say prayers, we pray the rosary, we have some speakers that come down and speak, and we march to the Supreme Court, the steps of the Supreme Court, and stand outside and pray for an end to Roe v. Wade and ask them to change their decision about this atrocity that's on our law books. And then there's an opportunity for the individual members. It's always held on a weekday, so even though the anniversary is actually on Sunday,
correct,
January 22nd, they're holding it on Monday so that we can go to the offices of the representatives and senators who represent us and who make the laws in this country that allow this horrible law to stay on the books in our country.
And one beautiful thing is that it gives it gives us a voice for the children, and it encourages every one of us that stands up for life to come together to realize that there is, you know, power in numbers, and we're not going to quit. And the voices of those who defend the victims must only increase. We cannot be silent, and we must increase this fight against abortion. It gives a voice to the children, and we're standing up for these unborn children. And it gives encouragement to our friends in the government. So if there are government officials that want to stand up for life, they know that they have people backing them. And it just encourages them more to fight the battle, because we need our congressmen to fight this battle for us. It also encourages us, and it's very inspiring when you see the group of people that are there, young, old, middle-aged, school-aged children, infants, and it's so encouraging. Families, school groups, church groups, it is so amazing and so encouraging, and it trains our young people to see and realize that those people that are, you know, up there in age, even my age, you know, we're not alone fighting this fight, that our youth and our high school and our college age students, all these pro-life groups in their schools attend this, and they're going to keep this battle going, and we need to have them there. So it is so encouraging to train our young leaders to fight this fight.
Now, some other information that we would like to give you, and these are all this information that we're bringing you and all of these pieces and bits that seem like they're non-connected really are connected, because they're all about life and they're facts that people need to know. And so we've gleaned these facts from multiple sources, and we know we're giving them to you slightly out of the context, but some of these documents are so lengthy that we can't do justice by bringing you the entire document. But these are some excerpts from a statement from the United States Catholic Conference on Bishops. In the United States, abortion is legal throughout pregnancy, yet abortion is a violation of human rights incomparable in magnitude and an atrocity for the whole human family. While Roe v. Wade, which was passed on January 22, 1973, appeared to create a right with some limitations because there was a health restriction in Roe v. Wade, on the same day in Doe versus Bolton, it eliminated all the health exceptions for having an abortion, and it made the law so broad that it effectively, as Betty mentioned earlier, allows an abortion anytime during pregnancy for any reason. The lack of any limits to legal abortion was never more clear in another case in 2000 when the Supreme Court ruled that even the horrific partial birth abortion procedure could not be restricted.
Wow.
And most Americans are surprised and shocked to learn about the lack of any meaningful limitations for abortion. Most know that things have gone too far, and together with those from many other faith communities, we work to try to bring about a society that recognizes abortion for what it truly is, killing the unborn. Now, when you look at the 33 years that the law has been on the books and now up to 46 million abortions that have been done, thousands of them are done in the 6 month of pregnancy or later when the child would actually survive if it were born. That means that the period of viability in a pregnancy, obstetrically speaking, is usually now down around 26 weeks of pregnancy. Most of the children that are born at 26 weeks of pregnancy, although they have some complications after the delivery, they will survive. Yet you can go in and abort a 26-week pregnancy. You're aborting children that would survive outside the womb without the mother.
Well, what amazes me is, too, that we keep coming up with new ways or new situations to abort children. I mean, we have young girls under the age of 21, 18, young teenage girls being legally allowed to have an abortion without their parents' permission. That's a surgical procedure. And for any other reason, you have to have parental permission except for an abortion.
And you can't even get your ears pierced at the piercing pagoda at the mall without your parents' permission. You can't get a belly ring. You can't, you know, get any of that other stuff done. You couldn't go into the emergency room with appendicitis and sign your own operative consent form to have your appendix removed, even though if it's not removed, if ruptured, you could die. You know, and they could save your life if they couldn't get in touch with your parents. You'd have to get somebody, you know, that's a legal age to sign the consent form. But your 12 and 13 and 14 and 15 and 16-year-old and 17-year-old daughter can walk into a Planned Parenthood and get an abortion in Pennsylvania without the parents being notified.
Well, one of the other things, too, that horrifies me is with in vitro fertilization now, a lot of times there are too many embryos that are fertilized. So therefore, the mother is pregnant with five or six fetuses, and their doctors are encouraging them to have fetal reduction. It is killing another human being. It's abortion.
This is another area where I like to not play with the language.
It drives me crazy.
I don't like fetuses, and I don't like embryos.
Okay.
I like babies.
Yeah.
Call them babies, because that's what they are. Mm-hmm. And when you're doing fetal reduction, you're doing baby reduction. There's five babies in your uterus, Mrs. Smith, and you would have a much better chance of two of them surviving if we killed three of them. So we're going to do some baby reduction, and we're going to eliminate what we think are the three weakest ones so that the two, hopefully you'll have twins and the two will survive.
Right. It's horrifying.
And we understand the tragic and heartbreak consequences that women and couples are going through with subfertility and infertility and their desire to want to be parents and have children. But the end does not justify the means.
And really, I do think it's a lack of information, because a lot of desperate couples who want to have children are very easily talked into these procedures by their physicians, which usually they have to produce a lot of cash to have these procedures done. And it's not covered under their insurance, but they're so desperate. And then they turn around and are encouraged to kill the babies, you know, to allow for a delivery of, you know, a healthy baby.
A safer, healthier pregnancy.
Correct.
It's just, you know. To continue with the a matter of the heart from the United States Catholic Conference on Bishops, in looking at all these abortions that take place, many people who came of age at the time of Roe v. Wade were hopeful that what the law said that it was going to promise would be an end to poverty and abuse. Who wouldn't hope that we could put an end to poverty and we could put an end to abuse? But the fact of the matter is that legal abortion promised what it could not give. It promised women a freedom to participate more fully in society, but it took their children and it broke their hearts. And countless women have suffered physically, emotionally, and spiritually because of abortion. Many have even lost their lives with legal abortions, yes, in hospitals, in sterile operating rooms, with sterile instruments and sterile procedures by board-certified surgeons. There are women every year who die from complications as a result of surgical and medical abortions, especially RU486 and mifepristone, which is legal in this country, and it is the abortion pill that women take up to 49 days of pregnancy, which is about 7 weeks, that will terminate the pregnancy and kill the baby.
And what's most frightening is that our young daughters and young women, young girls, teenagers, have the ability to obtain this information and these drugs without their parents being notified. It's absolutely horrific to me. And, you know, we don't hear a lot about in the news, but, you know, young girls and women have died. They've taken themselves to emergency rooms, received these medications. Their family has no idea, and they've never, you know, they don't survive.
Now, it sounds like that for the last 35 minutes that everything that we've talked about has been extremely negative, but there are some positive things. And the positive things that we can look at are today there are fewer abortions being done each year and fewer doctors who are willing to be involved in an abortion. And there are a lot of residency training programs who will not train doctors how to do abortions. There are many residents who refuse to engage in learning how to do the procedure, not from a moral point of view, but from a social and economic and political point of view, that it's just too controversial and they don't want their names tied up in it. The interesting thing in my own personal situation is that in Lower Bucks County, of the 15 or so OBGYNs on staff at the hospitals where I work, none of them do abortions or pregnancy terminations.
Praise
in their
God.
Private practices.
Yeah.
And, you know, not all of them are pro-life. They all contracept and they all refer people for abortions, which is participating in the act, which is almost as evil as doing the act, but at least they're not doing them. An interesting thing is that more Americans identify themselves as being pro-life in this week's National Catholic Register, or rather the Catholic Standard and Times. They did a poll showing that 55% of Americans are actually pro-life, and that when they were asked to list the most important reasons for abortion, only 4.5% of the women who had an abortion cited rape, incest, or a life-threatening or severe health problem caused by the pregnancy. And 5% of women, or 0.5% of women, said the abortion was because they were victims of rape. So the justification of saying, well, we need it for rape, we need it for incest, we need it for complicated pregnancies, it's less than 5% of all the abortions are done for that reason, and the other 95% of the abortions are done for contraceptive purposes. We've had ultrasound and other medical advances that have made it possible to have a greater appreciation of the humanity of the unborn child, And a lot of state legislatures have enacted measures that restrict or regulate the practice of abortion and reduce its incidence. Above all, the pro-life movement is brimming with youth. Roe v. Wade has left a trail of broken hearts, but Project Rachel and other ministries have continued to help with the broken heart. And Roe v. Wade cannot stand as the law of this great nation. This nation was founded on the self-evident truth that all people are created with an inalienable right to life, and that was given to us by God, and nobody can take that right away. Now, one of the things that we're blessed with here in the Archdiocese of Philadelphia is that we now have a pro-life cardinal who's heading up our archdiocese, and Betty is going to read some information about what Cardinal Regali has to say about promoting a culture of life and the rights of life and protecting it. This is from the Catholic Standard and Time from this week, and this is an article that was written by Cardinal Regali himself.
You're going to have to read that for me.
Since the Roe v. Wade decision rendered by the United States Supreme Court in January of 1973, the United States abortion rate is among the highest in developing countries. Hmm. We're worse than most of the other developing countries in the world.
And it's necessary for us to understand that, for the most part, women who are considering an abortion feel that this is their only option. In many cases, they feel alone and frightened and unsupported. Most of these women have not been properly informed of their options, nor do they understand fully the dignity of life, which is developing within them. These women must gently be guided and made to know that they are not alone. And also, we need to offer compassion, hope, and the choice of life to women who are otherwise would be alone and abandoned. And the March for Life reflects a bright promise for the future. And on Monday, January 23rd, has been designated by the bishops of the United States as a day of prayer and penance. And Cardinal Regali encourages all faithful and all people of goodwill to pray, fast, and sacrifice in atonement for the sins against human life, as well as for conversion for those who have had abortions or who have performed them.
Just make one tiny little sacrifice this coming Monday for the gift of life. Whether you skip a meal, cut a meal in half, if you don't have time to say an entire rosary, just say a Hail Mary and offer it up to Mary, our mother. She will help stamp out this abortion mess. She, being the Mother of God, can put an end to this, and the strength of the rosary will overcome and defeat this culture of death that we have. It was pointed out by John Paul II many times in his 25-year tenure as the leader of the church, and we now have a leader of the Archdiocese who is now the new chairman of the Pro-Life Committee for the United States Catholic Conference and Bishops, and he asks for our prayers to guide him and lead him in his new role in that particular position.
And Cardinal Regali is also going to be present in Washington, D.C. on Monday. And he's going to be the celebrant and homilist at a pro-life mass at the National Shrine of the Immaculate Conception at 7:30 a.m. on Monday, January 23rd. And he's going to concelebrate pro-life youth mass at the MCI Center. And at 12 o'clock, he's going to March for Life. Isn't that beautiful?
So he'll be walking with the tens of thousands. And just to throw in a little commercial announcement here, there's going to be busloads and busloads of people that are going to be leaving the Philadelphia area on Monday morning to go down to Washington, D.C. St. Ignatius Parish is going to have a 6:30 Mass and the buses will leave at 7 a.m. from the parking lot out at St. Ignatius.
Most parishes will have a bus for the pro-life march. So if you decide that you want to go, call your rectory today and see if you can get on that bus.
And if they don't have any seats, they'll refer you to an adjacent parish in your cluster.
Correct.
Because there's buses leaving from Holy Trinity, St. Andrews, St. John the Evangelist just here in our cluster in Bucks County where we live, St. Bede's in Holland. I know Our Lady of Good Counsel in Southampton, Assumption BBM, just all the parishes, St. Vincent de Paul in Hatboro, Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Doylestown.
If the bus is full for your parish, call the next parish over from you because there's going to be a seat for you. I know there will be.
Yeah, some of the other events that occurred today at noon at City Hall in Philadelphia,
right.
Generation Life had a pro-life rally with some pro-life speakers, and that was today at noon. Tomorrow morning at 7 o'clock at St. John's Church down at 13th and Market.
I think the mass
they're
is at
have,
9.
Well, there's two masses. There's a mass at 7, and then they're going to have a march to the abortion clinic at 7th and Applewood, downtown in Center City, Philadelphia, to stand outside. They're going to have a vigil for life, a prayer service, and say the rosary, and try to encourage women to not go in because Saturday is a big day for abortions in Center City.
I'd be amazed. It just amazes me the nerve that people have to walk past all these prayerful people to go in and murder their babies. It's amazing to me.
Well, one of the things that happens if you've never been to one of these abortuaries is that most of these girls have escorts.
Right. But I'm surprised
that are actually hired by the abortion clinic themselves that go out there and meet them in their car and along with their family member encourage them and support them to come into the clinic and get their procedures. And
I'm surprised they don't shut down for that day. It's so bold, isn't it?
Well, you want to talk about
and arrogant.
Bold. You know, we're having our pro-life march on Monday. And Sunday, they're having a pro-choice rally in Washington, D.C., not with tens of thousands, but with thousands of people who will show up and protest the pro-life march that's going to be on Monday. And they think they're going to one-up us by doing it a day early. But the fact of the matter is that we have the power of prayer behind us, and we have cardinals and bishops and priests and nuns and youth and Generation Life and parishes and youth groups and scouts and all kinds of people from all around the country marching with us and marching up to the Supreme Court and letting these justices know that this needs to come to an end, and we will continue to do it, and we will not stop until this law is overturned. We will not stop until abortion is no longer legal in this country. We will never give up. We will never stop. Everyone has a right to life, especially these children.
And as Catholics, we're obligated to stand for life. And if you can't do it, again, by attending these rallies, then do it prayerfully and personally. Because Christ our Lord Jesus expects this of us. And we need to step out in faith and express ourselves, even if it's just to our Creator by prayer. We have to stand up for life.
To continue with the announcements following the 7 o'clock Mass and the march on the one abortion clinic in Philadelphia at 7th Street, there's going to be a 9 o'clock Mass also at St. John at 13th and Market tomorrow morning. And then they're going to march from that Mass at 10 o'clock to the Planned Parenthood abortion clinic at 12th and Locust and hold a prayer vigil and a vigil for life outside that clinic led by the Generation Lifers and their supporters to say the rosary and prayer. And so this entire weekend is going to be filled with demonstrations and prayer vigils and prayer for every parish that there's an adoration chapel. Go and humble yourself before the Blessed Sacrament and kneel down and ask for His forgiveness for our country, for what we've done to our children in the last 40 years, and ask that we get an end to this culture of death. Just this past week, just to show you, I'm just going to throw out randomly. I don't even have any documents prepared on this, but I'm just going to throw out randomly what happened this week as a result of this culture of death. Earlier in the week, the Supreme Court of the United States voted 6-3 in favor of allowing Oregon's euthanasia-assisted suicide law to stand and be legal.
It's incredible.
The only state in the country that has an approved assisted suicide law. President Bush tried to oppose it by doing an end run about illegal use of drugs, and it was shot down by the Supreme Court, and that's with John Roberts on the Supreme Court, with four Catholics on the Supreme Court. The vote was still 6-4 and 3 against. Roberts dissented, Scalia dissented, and Clarence Thomas dissented. Three Catholics. But Kennedy, who's a Catholic, did not dissent. And the rest of them voted in favor of it. Just yesterday, the Supreme Court refused to hear a case that came from New Hampshire that mandates parental notification for children having abortions. They refused to hear the case. They didn't have enough gumption and enough guts to stand up and say, no, these children's parents need to be notified. And they sent it back to the states. We have California, who is now in the process of passing an assisted suicide law in their state. We have New York, who is planning on passing a law. We have Massachusetts, who changed the definition of marriage and allows same-sex marriage. All of this from this sexual revolution stuff in the 60s and promoting contraception and promoting abortion. And now if we can kill you at the beginning of your life, well, then why can't we kill you at the end of your life? And where is the constitutional guaranteed right to life? So please, we beg you, we need to pray. When Cardinal Regali ended his article in the Catholic Standard and Time, he ended with a quote from Gaudium et Spes, which is an encyclical that was written during Vatican II. And the quote is, God, the Lord of life, has entrusted to people the noble mission of safeguarding life, and people must carry it out in a manner worthy of themselves. Life must be protected with the utmost care from the moment of conception. Let us be convinced that human life and its transmission are realities whose meaning is not limited by the horizons of this life only. Their true evaluation and their full meaning can only be understood in reference to man's eternal destiny. Now, there's another article that appears this week in the National Catholic Register that's titled The Moment of Conception. And the author of the article is a professor of psychology at the University of Washington who claims that there is no moment of conception. But the guy who references the article is a professor of philosophy at the Legionnaires of Christ Center at Higher Studies in Thornwood, New York. And he has one very interesting paragraph that refutes the entire argument about whether or not life starts at conception. Because the people that are pro-life say that life absolutely begins at the time of fertilization when the egg and the sperm join together. But the pro-choice people say, no, life does not begin until later when pregnancy begins with implantation and even some people beyond that. Because why else then would they allow abortion beyond, you know, fertile implantation if they thought that life existed? So they say it's not really a baby until later and nobody really has come up with a definition. This guy says, if you're out hunting in the woods and you hear some rustling and you see a figure darting into a bush. It could have been a person, or it could have been a bear. And I'm not really sure. Well, if I'm not really sure, should I feel free to shoot first and ask questions later, if I bothered to ask any questions at all? And is this sound moral reasoning? The point is that if you even think that there's a possibility that it could be a person, then you shouldn't shoot until you're sure, because you might end up wounding or killing somebody. Well, the same philosophy applies to the beginning of life. If you're not sure, then we should be making the error on the side of precaution in protecting life. All right, maybe we can't convince people that it definitely is life, although it is, and it's in every embryology textbook. But the reality is that if you're not sure, then err on the side of caution and protect life. And don't commit an abortion. Don't commit a murder. Don't shoot that gun into the bush until you know whether it's a bear or it's not a bear. We shouldn't even seek as an end or a means to destroy what we know to be innocent human life. But we should not destroy what might be a human life if we don't know. So what an interesting and fascinating, you know, approach to that. So as we end up, Betty's got a prayer for life that she's going to read, but I have a couple of announcements. One of the more important ones is that there is a mission that's going to occur at St. Ignatius Parish starting on Sunday evening, January 22nd. So that's this coming Sunday. And it's going to go for 4 nights from Sunday to Wednesday. And it's being led by a Dominican by the name of Father Frank Sutman. He's going to preach at all the masses this coming Sunday at St. Ignatius. And the time starts at 7:30. And it's going to be 7:30 every evening.
Les and Betty Ruppersberger. Join us on the third Friday of every month from 4 to 5 p.m.
And we'll sign off and say goodbye. And we'll see you next month, because we ran out of time. But don't forget that and the Natural Family Planning Conference, March 4th.
God.